Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Justin, and I am an alcoholic. Please bear with me. I had some nasal surgery this past Wednesday, and I'm still recuperating from it. And so my voice sounds a little weird. At least it sounds weird to me, and I may have to stop periodically to wipe some blood from my nose. I hope it won't be too distracting. If it is, just say so, and I could turn my screen off or put something on so you can't see my nose. Well, I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'll start off by telling you that I was born in Buffalo, New York, pretty normal coming into this world. My alcoholism is rampant in my family tree on both sides of my family. Both of my grandfathers were active alcoholics. My grandfather on my father's side, he actually was such a hardcore alcoholic that he was dead and buried, and nobody even missed him. The way that my family found out that he died was my grandmother started getting his widow benefits from Army. So he wasn't around very much. And when he was drunk and violent and abusive. And I never met him. He was dead long before I came along. And on the other side of my family, my other grandfather, where he would be categorized as an alcoholic because he drank every day and he drank to excess. And when he did drink, lots of times there were legal ramifications. I did meet him once or twice, and he was kind of a jerk. I never really knew any of my grandparents other than my grandma Brandon. but that really didn't play into it. I grew up, it was brought to my attention that I grew up poor. I did not know that I grew up poor. We never wanted for anything. My parents both worked full time. Both my parents had their own businesses on and off periodically, a gift shop on Elmwood. My father had some real estate investments, things like that. We were never, super rich or anything like that. But I was raised to believe that that I could accomplish anything in my life, and if I set my mind to it, I could do anything. I had two strong, good parents. We were raised Catholic. Both my sisters went from kindergarten to graduating high school in the Catholic education system. Unfortunately for me, I failed second grade. And when it was actually fortunate that I failed second grade because nobody could understand why this pretty bright kid couldn't read. So after I failed second grade, I was given a lot of tests, and it was determined that I had a learning disability. And this is when learning disabilities were first coming to the forefront of the education system. And so I was later told that I'm dyslexic and that I probably have an attention deficit disorder, but those weren't defined in the mid 70s when it was realized. So I was taken out of a Catholic school and put into public school where they could better handle that. And I just remember being terrified. I remember a lot of my youth being afraid of other people, not being comfortable around other people. And, I hear a lot of people when they give their leads, they tell their stories that they always kind of felt less than. That is true with me to a certain extent, but I always kind of felt more than. I always kind of felt like, well, if you knew me, you would understand that I'm smarter, I'm better looking, I'm more physically capable, I'm more intelligent. And as it turns out, I was a little bit of a bully, especially after I failed second grade. I remember that, while they were still determining why I failed second grade, I was still going to the Catholic school. Now I was older and bigger than all the kids in my class, and any grief that I took from anybody, I no longer took. There was a neighborhood kid, Mike, and I bullied him relentlessly for years, just because I could. I wasn't getting anything out of it. And and one day he just didn't take it anymore, and he turned around and he kicked the crap out of me. And I mean, when I say he kicked the crap out of me, he kicked the crap out of me in front of the entire neighborhood, so much so that when it was over, he picked me up and threw me in a garbage can. And to be honest with you, I had blacked that out of my memory. It wasn't till Mike and I had a friendship reunion, probably in our late 20s, and he brought that up, and I had forgotten all about it, completely forgotten all about it. But after that, that was the first time that I ever got my ass kicked, and so I kind of knew what it was like to get my ass kicked. But I kind of attribute that kind of started leading to my drinking, because the first time that I got drunk, actually the first time that I drank was with Mike. I went through school the way that everybody else went through school. Once I started going to public school and started getting the help that I needed for my learning disabilities, I was in a school. It was called Frederick Law Olmsted School for the Gifted and Talented, and I was there because they had it was the only school in Buffalo that had special education. So I was kind of teased and kind of picked on, but again, I was bigger than everybody else and a little bit older than everybody else, so I wasn't really you wanted to pick on me because you were a geeky genius. Well, I'll just punch you in the face and that'll be the end of it. So long story short, I got to high school, and that's when my drinking kind of really started. I remember I was probably like 13 years old. I have two older sisters, and my oldest sister is about 15 years older than me, and I don't really remember her very much growing up. My other sister is just 2 years, 2.5 years older than me, and she went through a lot of problems with alcohol and drugs as a teenager. And I think I had forgotten all about this, but probably somewhere around 11 or 12, my parents went out for the evening and left my sister in charge of me, which was something she was not interested in doing. So instead of going to the party that she was going to go to, she invited everybody over to our house, and she proceeded to get me to feed me alcohol. And we never got in trouble. I don't really remember it. I remember being dizzy and thinking I was really funny and being sick the next day, but I don't really remember it. But I do remember that friend Mike. He had moved away, and he lived out in Lancaster, and so my parents dropped me off at his house, and on a Friday night, he and I met up with a bunch of his school buddies in a field and drank hard cider. And it was the first time that I really remember not feeling awkward, not feeling isolated from people. I actually was talking to the best looking girls at the party, or whatever you call it, and having a really good time. And I remember that when it was time to go, and we were going to be in trouble if we weren't back at Mike's house at a particular time. But I remember telling Mike, we'll take the chance that his dad's asleep and blah blah blah. And Mike is insisting that we go, but It's the first time I'm getting a lot of attention from good looking women. So I don't want to go anywhere, but we ended up going home, and boy, I tell you, I couldn't wait to do it again. It wasn't long thereafter. I got into music. I had a lot of friends that were musicians. I started getting into music, grew my hair long. I went to performing arts for high school. I was a theater major. I was also a drummer. I was also in a bunch of different bands over the years. There was a lot of, most of the time the band played, it was at parties, and so we were always playing. And being a theater major at performing arts, there's a position that the student has where they are the stage manager and in the theater department. And I was like the junior stage manager. And then I became the stage manager. And what that meant was that I had keys to everything, the theater and all that kind of stuff. And the stage manager that that I was his assistant for my first year there, he would bring in beer balls, and we would sit in the theater in the projection booth instead of going to classes and drink beer, which I don't recommend if you're trying to get an education. But so the drinking kind of started off slow, like most people would. But I started to realize that that alcohol was my solution, that alcohol was handling all of the difficulties that I was having in life. I could just drink and they all went away. And the girls came around, the cool kids were all my friends. I didn't have the shyness or the awkwardness or any of those things once the alcohol, excuse me, once the alcohol started flowing. So alcohol quickly became an important part of my life. This is a men's group, so I can feel comfortable saying this here. Once I was at the age that sex started coming around, alcohol played a large part in that. I realized right off the bat that I wasn't very good at sex. I realized that it didn't last very long. And my portion was done pretty quickly. And then I met this girl who's a beautiful young girl, and we were at a party and we were drinking and having a really good time. And then we decided to go for a ride in my car and find a nice, quiet, dark spot. And that was the first time that I ever had sex while I was drinking. And it lasted a very long time. I want to say hours, but I don't know how long it lasted. But it lasted a very, very long time. And still to this day, I still consider it one of the best sexual experiences of my life. But that relationship was very short-lived. And at the time, I didn't understand why she broke my heart. She made me cry. She made me a little bit suicidal. I actually, the relationship wasn't very long. It was a couple of months, but in the couple of months, we had told each other that we loved each other. We had made plans for after high school, and we were going to move to New York City, and all these things. And then it ended really abruptly when her ex-boyfriend came back into the picture. And as I said, I was crushed. I remember that I was sitting in my bedroom, and I had one of those big Rambo hunting knives, and I had decided that I was going to teach her a lesson, and I was going to kill myself, and that would show her. And I'm literally sitting there with a knife in one hand, holding it up to my wrist. And honestly, I just didn't have the courage. I really didn't have the courage. And then it dawned on me that That bitch probably wouldn't even come to my funeral. You know, how would she even know that I died? You know, she probably wouldn't hear about the fact that I killed myself till months after, so she would never be at my funeral. And I guess, I hate to say it this way, but I guess fortunately for me, right around that time, a girl that I was friends with at school committed suicide. And that was, you know, that made it very real, very real. And how suicide is a temporary solution for, or a permanent solution for a temporary problem. And I just realized how that was not the case, that that was not going to be a good thing for me, and that I've never really had a serious thought of suicide since, thank God. But with that heartbreak, I kind of I spiraled down, and I was still in school. I was going into my senior year of high school, and I was working full time, and I was getting done working, and I worked with a bunch of adults. You know, they didn't even really know that I was 18 or 19 and a high school senior. Because I would, you know, I'd get there at 3 in the afternoon and I'd work till 11 o'clock at night, and then I'd sit in the bar and drink with them. And I did look a little bit older. My drinking escalated a little bit more. I got a promotion at that job. I graduated from high school. And it's funny, when we had our 30-year high school reunion, and so I was going through a lot of pictures, and I was recalling how I didn't remember these pictures. I didn't remember having these pictures taken. And my mother said, "Of course you don't, because you were drunk the whole time." And I don't remember that. I don't remember being drunk the whole time. I do remember drinking, but I don't remember being that big of an alcoholic back then. But my mother says that I was. So, long story short, I graduated from high school. I got this job, a promotion, where I was traveling. The drinking escalated. I ended up going out drinking with the guy who owned the company, very wealthy guy, and we ended up getting shit faced drunk together. He's a big guy. He got into a fight with the bouncers. By the time I got to work the next day, my roommate had told everybody the story that I had told him, and so I lost that job for bad mouthing the boss. And I took that as my opportunity to pack up my car and move to California. And I was out there for exactly 5 years. I worked for a record company for a number of those years. Toured with a band nationally. My drinking was pretty crazy. After the band broke up and everybody went their separate ways, I started working in bars. I worked at a place called the Hollywood Tropicana, home of female mud and oil wrestling, which for a guy in his early 20s was an unbelievable job. The guy who owned the club was a cocaine importer, and the club was that club and other clubs they owned was just a way to launder his money. He wanted all of his staff, especially the girls, to be in good moods, so they would just start feeding you alcohol from the moment you got there. Drugs were just absolutely rampant, and I thought this was great. You know, I was making good money. I was surrounded by beautiful women. Most of them were, you know, penthouse and hustler and Playboy girls and that kind of thing. And some were porn stars. And you know, I'm getting fed drugs and alcohol, and you know, it was a pretty good thing for a guy my age. And after a while, that just really got to be too much. I remember being at work at the club and just passing out drunk. I'd be standing. What part of my job was is that I would walk around the club with one particular girl, and she would give lap dances, so I would hold the money and, you know, make sure that that she was safe and the guys weren't touching her. And you know, a couple times while doing that, I was so drunk and so high that I just collapsed. And all the money that was in my hand, hundreds of dollars, just fell on the floor. And now the poor girl's alone. And fortunately, there was enough guys working there and security there that it really didn't become a, wasn't an issue really. But it was an issue for me because I could realize that I was really overdoing it. And when I started living with a couple of the guys that I worked with, it was just 24/7. You drank till you passed out, then you came to and continued drinking. So it was pretty crazy. After a while, I came back to Buffalo, and after the earthquake in '94, I came back to Buffalo. And it was, the apartment building I was living in was completely destroyed. Really, I lost everything except some clothes and my car. And so I decided to come back to Buffalo. It might snow in Buffalo, but the earth doesn't move. So came back here, and I had a really hard time. I was trying to reconnect with old friends, but because of my drinking in the past, I kind of burnt most of those bridges. And so I'm, making new friends and meeting people in bars. And so it just kind of it continued and it continued and it continued and it continued. My drinking just continued. That was like the real constant. I was I was now drinking daily. I'm now smoking pot daily. I'm now doing cocaine on occasion. I'm starting to get into hallucinogenics. When I got into hallucinogenics, I'm just doing it like you couldn't believe. People were like, "Jesus Christ, Justin." I had a December one year where I did acid every day. Just really crazy, really crazy stuff. I had a couple relationships that were just kind of, I got involved in them to kind of slow me down a little bit, maybe help me to stop drinking. I always thought, and I've heard this said many other times, I always thought that in that I would meet that girl and my life would change. I would get that job and my life would change. I would meet the girl, I'd get the job, I'd meet the girl, I'd buy the house, I'd get the car, we'd get married, we'd have kids, I get the white picket fence and blah blah blah, and everything would be happy and great. But my drinking always stood in the way. And if you stood in the way of my drinking, which most of these girls did, then you weren't welcome in my circles anymore. And I mean, that was even true for my immediate family. I saw them less and less and less. And they didn't want to see me when I had been drinking. So I would have to see them like for breakfast. I'd meet up with my mother and father for breakfast on Sundays, go to church, go to breakfast, and then say goodbye to them, and I could, start my party. And this just went on and on and on and on. And I was working at Paddock Chevy. I decided to try my hand at car sales. And after a lot of partying, my boss, Dwayne Paddock, came to me and he said, "Listen, Justin, either you're going to stop drinking or you're going to stop working here." And I had been. I don't know if I'd been given that ultimatum before, but I had gone through so many jobs, so many girls, so many jobs over the years. It's ridiculous. But he told me I needed to go to AA or get out of the dealership. And I was making pretty good money, so I thought I'd give it a shot. It's the first time I went to AA, and I called the central office, and they told me of a meeting that was right around the corner of my house that was starting, and I got to that meeting, and I won't say the name of the group, but it was was a little bit more of a militant group, somebody, a group that's a little bit more controlling of its members, a little bit more cultish. And at the end of the meeting, I was assigned a sponsor. He had about 2 weeks, maybe a month of sobriety. And the next day, I came back to the meeting, and I was told that after the meeting was over, that we were all going to climb into my blazer, and we were going to go over to paddock, and we were going to quit my job, and then we are all going to climb into my blazer and drive around from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting all day long, recruiting new members and saving the world from alcoholism. And I said, well, you know, I'm here to save my job, not to quit it. So AA is a cult. Thank you very much. Have a good day. And so I stopped going to AA. I believed it was a cult. I didn't want to hear anything about it. And that kept me away from AA for a long while. And I also lost that job at Paddock Chevy. Lost a myriad of other jobs, and, you know, tried this and tried that. You know, nothing worked, and you know, I'll only drink beer, and I'll only drink wine, and this and that, and the other thing. And you know, I did have some times of control, usually short-lived. But I don't know, I got into a relationship with a girl who said she didn't realize I was an alcoholic. And I was having trouble keeping a job again. And I was having trouble keeping the girl again. And we had decided to break up and decided to move out, that I was moving out. And I was planning on moving back in with my parents. And the phone rang, and it was my mother. And my mother said, I understand that you and Julie broke up and you're getting kicked out of the apartment and you're not moving back in here while you're drinking. And then my doctor called out of the clear blue sky. He had never done that before, and said that he's no longer going to be my doctor if I continue drinking. And so I did what any good alcoholic would do. I told everybody to fuck off, and I grabbed a bottle and started drinking it. And I was just about to pass out, and so I laid down and went to bed. While I was lying on the bed, it was as if God reached his hand into my life and just kind of shook everything up like a snow globe. And I got up out of that bed, and I called my doctor back, and I told him, why don't you go ahead and make arrangements for me to go to detox and rehab. And so I went to detox and rehab for the first time, and I got out, and 28 days later, and my parents were happy that I was cured of alcoholism. That was the exact wording, and that if this ever happened again, that I would be cut off from the family. And you know, so the relationship went on. I started going to daily AA meetings, and I wasn't drinking, and life was getting better. Life was getting better. I remember that I was going pretty regularly to a meeting. I don't know if it's still there or not. There's a place called the Jewish Center. It's a synagogue and a Jewish community center on Delaware Avenue downtown. And the apartment building I was living in was literally behind the Jewish Center, and they had, I think it was a Friday morning meeting. And so I went there on a Friday morning. And, you know, at the time I was a short order cook, and I was the only short order cook at that meeting. All the other guys at that meeting were successful businessmen, lawyers. I think there was a couple doctors, you know, so there were Mercedes in the parking lot, BMWs and all that stuff. And I say this because, you know, as I'm going to meetings and I'm trying to find a sponsor and trying to do all the things that everybody's talking about, I'm finding that everybody keeps telling me to find a sponsor, find somebody who has what I want. Well, this one guy, he's got a champagne colored Jaguar and he wears a different Rolex every day. And that's what I want. So I want him to be my sponsor. And so I ask him and he agrees. And then he wants me to do these steps and I don't want to do that. So I stop. I ask another guy who's got a Mercedes, and I found out the hard way that that's not the type of things that I need to be looking for in a person. So long story short, I didn't stay with AA very long that time. And I lost that girlfriend. Things got crazy. My father got sick, and I had to move back into the family house to help care for my father. After my father passed away, I came into a little bit of money. My mother strongly encouraged, more like bent my arm, that I should purchase a restaurant that was a little neighborhood landmark of a restaurant that's been there 100 years and was for sale. I did not want to do it, and she really, verbally abused me into doing it. And so I did. And I really had a lot of self-doubt. I really, I prior to leaving my job, and prior to buying the restaurant, I had decided I needed to slow down, and I was able to slow down. I pretty much eliminated alcohol. It was just getting high. And once we took over the restaurant, the stress of the restaurant, all of that just kind of fell down on my head. I started drinking again. And I was working 10-hour days and drinking, another 6, 7, 8 hours, sleeping for a few hours, and getting up and doing it again and again and again and again. And after about, I don't know, a year of that, I said to my mother, I said, I can't do this anymore. And I need to go to detox and rehab. So that was number two. Over the course of the next 7 years, I did approximately 20 different detoxes and approximately 10 different rehabs. And every time I was this is it, this is it, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. And I was pretty serious. I was pretty serious about staying sober and not drinking. And then it would all just fall away for just some kind of, trivial thing. I remember part of my routine was I would, while I was sober, I would get up every morning and I would say my prayers and I would go on a nice walk. And I remember the one morning I just decided to go walk an extra block and I got at the end of that block, let's walk another block. And then I'm walking past the bar Checkers. And as I'm walking past, the bartender who's there all by himself is outside having a cigarette. And I know him, and he's like, hey, come on in. And sure, why not? Another time I started drinking again, just, because I felt like it, So I'm back at it again, and I'm back at it again, and I can't stay sober. I can stop drinking periodically. Anytime somebody starts to mention the steps, I'm not, interested. They're too hard. It's too difficult. Every time I come back, I find a new sponsor, and it just doesn't stick. And I'm one of these guys that I'm criticizing my sponsor, and what does he know? And blah blah blah. I'm just a total mess. And I can't really tell you when this was, because I was drunk. I had a couple of really long binges where I still owned the restaurant and I was stealing from the restaurant. I was stealing the receipts, I was stealing the payroll, I was stealing the tax money just to keep drinking. I was actually removed by my mother from the restaurant. And so, I would go in after the restaurant closed. She didn't know that I had a backup set of keys. So I would go in after the restaurant was closed, and I would just empty the cash box, go out drinking. And that happened many times. I'm stunned that I never ended up bankrupting the business. A business, I don't own it anymore, but it's still open to this day. But I remember I had been on a binge for a long time, and I had finally, I was completely and utterly broke. I had no money. I had no energy. I had nothing. And I came to, and I'm vibrating. I'm like, my hands are like this. And I'm laying on my recliner in the living room of the house. And I said to myself, said, Justin, how come no matter what it is you do, no matter what job you have, what girl you have in your life, no matter if you're drinking beer or alcohol or doing drugs, no matter what, you always end up back in this place. And by in this place, I don't mean the living room of my family home and my recliner. I mean vibrating, shaking violently, physically ill. I was so sick, my blood felt like motor oil coursing through my veins. I felt like I wanted to vomit, but I didn't have anything to vomit. I had a fever. I'm shaking. I felt horrible. Why is it, Justin? Why is it that you keep bringing yourself back to this place time and time again? Don't you know that this is going to kill you? Don't you know that this is going to kill you? And after all these years being around AA, and after all these times that I sat in a meeting, or even I used to sit at the bar with my drinking buddies and say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, you're an alcoholic. I never really believed it. I don't know if I even knew what an alcoholic was. But at that moment, in that recliner, in that living room, I had a moment of clarity. I am an alcoholic. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care where I've been or who I've been with. I am an alcoholic. And so I decided that I was going to take this seriously, and I started looking for a sponsor, and I started looking around, and I found a sponsor, and we started going through the book. And I was probably about a month, maybe a little longer, sober, and my niece was going off to college. So my mother, who I was living with at the time, my sister and my niece, they were all going up to Troy to get her set up in her dorm room. And I said to myself, Justin, if I'm left alone, I'm going to drink. So I made all the arrangements to go stay with a friend of mine who lived out in Forestville for the weekend. And the plan was I was going to get out of work, and I was going to go to Forestville and spend the weekend out there. And I'm at work, and my mother texted me saying she was leaving and I should have a good weekend out in Forestville. And I thought about it for a couple of minutes. I said, everybody, including my sponsor, thinks I'm going to Forestville. If I just call my buddy in Forestville and tell him I'm not coming, or tell him that I'm stuck at work and I'll come tomorrow, I can go home and get drunk. And so I'm sitting there in my office at work, and I'm making a list. I need to stop at the liquor store and get this bottle and get that bottle. I need to stop at Tops and get ginger ale, and I need to. I threw out my bong, so I need to go to Terrapin and get a bong. I need to go to the dope guy's house and blah blah blah, and all. I'm making this list of all the things, all the ducks I need to get in a row, so that I can get fucked up. And then my phone beeps, and I look at it, and there's a picture of my mother. And it's my mother, my niece, and my sister, and they've all got on the school's shirts and all that kind of stuff. And I looked at that picture, and I said to myself, I said, what am I doing? What am I doing? I'm finally getting somewhere with this AA, and I'm gonna, what's to say I leave here and I get all these supplies and I do all this stuff, and what's to say I die, And so, long story short, I haven't, I decided not to drink that day, and I got in my car and I went out to Forestville and I spent the weekend in Forestville. And at the end of that day, I got down on my knees and I thanked God for keeping me sober that day. And I haven't had a drink or a drug since. And for me, that's really, really amazing. I recently celebrated 6 years back in May. I celebrated six, excuse me, June. I celebrated 6 years of continuous sobriety. What life is like now is kind of hard to say, because I've gone all this time without drinking. I quit smoking also a couple years ago, so I'm alcohol free, drug free, nicotine free, but I'm not free of my alcoholic mind, my brain. I lost my mother a little over a year ago. And I think that everybody in my family thought that I would drink again over that. And I just couldn't even imagine it, I remember coming to AA and hearing people talk about miracles. And, for me, growing up Catholic, the miracles were turning water into wine, parting of the Red Sea, things like that. Me not drinking, that's not a miracle. But yes, me, Justin Brandon, not drinking for 6 years, that is a miracle. I am a miracle, and everybody here who has not drank today is a miracle. We really are. Now, I'm sober 6 years. I, unbeknownst to me, I did the steps in a clinical setting years ago with a with not with a sponsor, but with a therapist. And when we were done was when she revealed to me that she had gotten me to do the steps. I'm currently I finished well, I'm working on step nine. I'm working on doing my amends. I have not completed the steps with a sponsor. I have not completed the book with a sponsor. I try to go to meetings every day, but I find that like I said previously, that I thought that one day I'll meet the girl and I'll get the job and then I'll be happy and life will be good. Well, I kind of thought that with alcoholism and AA, once I sober up, once I do this and I do that, life will be good. I'll be happy, and I know what I know that's life on life's terms now. I know that dealing with the loss of my mother has been one of the hardest things I've ever done, ever had to do, and I continue to do it today. I have had moments of weakness where I thought about drinking. It wasn't a serious thought. None of them have been serious thoughts. I've never been standing outside of the liquor store praying not to go in, but I will tell you that since my mother died, I have had some serious thoughts of drinking. I didn't really touch too much on it here, but my mother was very instrumental in getting me sober. I know nobody can get us sober. But if there's anybody that gets credit for getting me sober, it would be my mother. And it would just be an insult to her and to her legacy and to her memory for me to go out drinking. And I've had, I've had some, I just had COVID a couple weeks ago, and it was the worst I've ever had. And I remember sitting here in my living room and saying to myself, Justin, why don't you just go get a bottle? And that's what you used to do when you got sick previously, and I didn't, I've thought, why can't I be West Coast or California sober and smoke a little weed? I can't do it. I know what it's going to lead to. I know that I'm an alcoholic. And I also know that I'm running out of time. I can't believe that I've used so much time so far on my drunkalog. I really don't like to do that. I like to talk more about recovery than the drinking part, and I apologize. But what I want to close with is the things that I need to stay sober. And the number one thing that I need to stay sober is honesty. I remember sitting at a meeting and they were reading how it works. Constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. That's me. When I was drinking, and not just when I was drinking, up to this day, I'm a liar. I can lie just to have something to say. I will make up a story just to have something to say. I have to be honest. I have to be honest in all my occasions, in my everyday life, in every association. I have to be honest. I have to admit that I'm an alcoholic because I am an alcoholic, like it or not, and nothing, no amount of sobriety, no amount of segregation away from alcohol and drugs is ever going to change that. Every now and again, you hear about some scientist in Europe or wherever that's invented a pill or a shot or this or that. And I don't want it. I don't want it because then I will still be an alcoholic who is dealing with untreated alcoholism. I need this. I need AA. I need you guys. I need my higher power. Without my higher power, without AA, without the guys, without all the people in AA, I would have gone back to drinking long ago, and I would have been dead long ago. I know that for a fact today. I have to be honest with myself. I have to be open with myself. I have to be willing. I have to be able to ask somebody for help. I have to be able to ask for that help, and then once I've asked for that help and I'm getting the help, I have to accept that help, and I have to embrace that help, and I have to understand that, being an alcoholic isn't the curse that I always thought it was. I mean, it's more of a blessing than anything for me at this point because I know myself so much better. I really, really think that I know for a fact. I hear people say, AA works differently for different people. I've heard that said. And some people come in and first time they stop drinking, they got a sponsor, they got a home group, they did the steps, and they've been sober for 40 years. And God bless you. That wasn't my case. I wasn't ready. And when I was ready, AA was here for me. And I want AA to be here for the next guy. I will tell you that in closing, the last thing that I want to say is that I have never sponsored anybody. I've been told by my former sponsor that I was ready to sponsor people. I'm terrified of it. I'm absolutely terrified of it. But the more that I see other people sponsor, and the more that I listen to the people that I ask to sponsor me, and all that kind of thing, I think that I would be good at it. And I think that I hope that I will be sponsoring or available to sponsor pretty soon. I hope to continue going through the book and continue with the steps, and I hope to continue being sober for the rest of my life. I know that I just have today, and I hope that somebody got something out of this. I'm sorry that I went a little long with my drunk-a-log, but I guess that's just how I roll today. So, thank you, Jim, for asking me. It's been a wonderful opportunity. I love being a member of this group. With my work situation, I can't get to a lot of in-person meetings anymore, and I was actually kind of fed up with Zoom meetings and the impersonality of it. But with my work schedule changing the way that it did, I started coming to this meeting, and I've just absolutely fell in love with it. It's a great meeting. It's a great group of guys, I would much rather come to this meeting than any other meeting. So, guys, thank you for letting me share. I really do appreciate it, and I hope that somebody got something out of it. Have a great day. Thank you, guys.